stuff, and I wish I'd read that Christmas book, by the book.
Yeah, okay. Well, I think I really agree with the comments that Rachel is a lot of communications with biomathematicians. And actually, I'm in the panel of last round funding of cancer resistance virus centers in the NIH. So basically across all states, and you have grants and proposals. Basically, his proposal is you can see the heaviest mathematical components compared to other proposals. Yeah, so this is very interesting. So if you see here, I basically change the topic. The reason drive to me to do this because yesterday afternoon I listened to two or three talks and got really excited. I think would be better talk about something we did, you know, some of work maybe a few years, but really integrated in the context of last, you know, yesterday's talk. So I think that would be not myself getting excited because that at that time the work is excited. I get excited. Now I think half a year later, a few months later, you're not excited, right? Like that's normal for anybody. So for me, maybe not excited, but maybe for integrated in the talking yesterday would be, you know, sort of excited. I want to make myself more excited for that. Well, this two slides there may be very basic. I mean, most maybe not, but just in case. Actually, last October, I ran a very intensive course in Institute of Mathematics in the Chinese Academy of Science in Beijing. So I gave a more basic biology and then later moved to the system biology. So here, just give two slides just in case because I will talk about this. This concept will be used in my talk. So basically, in humans, you have chromosomes. So that's a chromosome. And then the genes basically located in chromosome. So normally those genes is fixed in the chromosome, okay? And then another concept is called gene expression and DNA. So as we see, this is chromosome and DNA, and so transcribed to called mRNA, and then you can really get a protein. So that's the process basically from DNA to protein. So this is very exciting for biology that a lot of high throughput technology have been developed and applied to this kind of research. I just give you one example. I have my personal experience. You go to 5 years ago, you sequenced just 24 genomes. It cost you $5 million. I just sequenced 20 genomes. It cost me $20K. I just get sequence data. So you can see it's very fast developing, and the cost of those things getting down and down. So Alonis really have the capability to do that. So why system biology? So traditionally, people think the cells, a lot of parts with linear fashion, they work as a linear fashion, but the more and more crosstalks is found between the pathways. And when you put all these pathways, you really get a lot of, and the identity of the pathway is gone. So basically, it's network, it's not pathways. And then, however, you can, from those networks to dissect the building blocks, for example, here. Those kind of building blocks statistically recurring again and again and again. So it's just like bricks for this building. So you understanding the property of dynamics, I think the mathematics coming in for that and modeling those will be understanding more of biology at that level. Then, what kind of system are doing? So system biology, one is try to produce biological insights, but this is really overlap with traditional biology. However, traditional biology cannot have pre-models. So that's why how biology will move into system biology, because we want pre-models. We want to understand it, and then we want to predict. So the system biology can do that, but traditionally biology cannot do it. So one thing I want to talk is that this work actually starting to early 2006. At that time, there are no sort of whole genome sequencing for tumor yet. But we feel this thing could be happened very soon. Then we don't want to sequence myself at that time. But we ask the question, if you have the sequencing data, how you interpret it? Right. So that's the starting of the projects. But during the projects, once we done, it's very surprising, get shocked, is that a group from John Hankins, the sequence 24 genomes, cancer genomes. This is a shock because those money is from private private foundation. So basically, we nobody knows this group is doing that. So if you NIH funded, we know they will come, 2 years, 3 years. So it's really shock. But another layer of the shock is that they find a lot of mutations, even let's say breast cancer. Breast cancer we expected before, it's all community expected before, is that you have a lot of driver mutations, so-called driver mutations, the gene mutated driver cancer. So the driver mutation should be overlaps. You should have a fraction of overlap between those individual tumors. But when you examine the data, it's just maybe one or two genes overlap with a few samples and totally not overlap at all. So that really makes us shocked, and the whole community is shocked. And then there's debate a lot. So here is one example in science debate that whether you need to go to sequence genome, cancer genome. So now it's nobody argue that, but at that time it's really argue a lot. So there's a few letters from scientists here in this collected, in science. They just argue that it's really time consuming and the money consuming. But what you gave is just a list of driver mutations and then you cannot interpret it. So that's the argue. And at the same time, I didn't show that, it's pretty similar a few months later. I also in science, they have technical comments. So technical comments are really from the leading person in the field, several leading person in the field. They don't believe they're saying that you have so many driver mutations. They said maybe only a few. And then they argue that this method could be wrong. So you can see very shocked and a lot of even Eric Lander, for example. Eric Lander, you can check. Eric Lander from Broad Institute, he said he's the one to propose to do the cancer genome sequencing, and Franz Koenig, and both of them. So Franz Koenig now is directly NIH. Both of them proposed want to do genome sequencing, but he was shocked and he doesn't believe you have so many driver mutations and then they are not overlapped. So he queries that whether your method for statistics is wrong. So you can see the comments, very interesting at that time. So before I move, for what I just gave a few concepts that will be necessary. One is called Alcon gene. Alcon gene means once this gene gets mutated and promote the cancer development. Another one is called tumor suppressor. Tumor suppressor is that normally the kept genome very stable and don't want to go to bad side. But once lose the function, get mutation, they will make the cancer develop. Another one called DNA methylation. So we talk about a lot of mutation, but another one is called epigenetics. It's called methylation. So methylation means make this gene cannot silenced. The gene cannot express. So that's the methylation. Keep this in mind. Okay. So then at that time we're collecting the largest human signaling pathways. That's been manually curated from the literature. And then we have 5,000 genes, a lot of interactions. And that's the first time and you get compare so large signaling network human. And then we set up a concept is that so the so-called network here is that the node is the genes and the links here means this gene could regulate this gene either positive or negative. Okay, positive means make the signal amplified. Negative is inhibit that. So another idea is that we put the frequencies of the mutations of the genes, and then this is like the all-con gene addictive. So as long as they have more frequency mutation, we think this one, this link, is could be used more than others. So that's some of the concept for that. But funny, when we map those mutations, but this mutation is not from genome sequencing. It's from the historic collecting of the mutations from tumors, but it's already around 1,000 mutation genes at that time. And then we have mapped also the methylation genes from cancer stem cell. So very surprisingly, and the cancer stem cells methylation genes are dominantly in tumor suppressors. This is one sort of surprise, but later on it gave us ideas how it works. Then, like I said, you can dissect the whole network to different building blocks. Okay, let's see, we put all three nodes. And then each of them, you can make different groups. So one group, for example, you have no mutation at all in this block. Another group have one mutation, and two mutation, and three mutation. Okay? Very simple statistical modeling is that you ask the question, so in this three node, in three links, what's the ratio between the positive regulation to negative regulation? Okay? So by random, you have such ratio here. However, when you increase those mutations, and here's all con genes only, when the mutation increased, you will find the ratio of positive and to negative is increased. What does mean of this? It means that all con gene mutation really preferentially like in these positive loops. And then they basically, when they get the mutation, they would more amplify the signal. Okay? So that's the idea. So the experimental validated for one of the all con genes is showing exactly the same. However, for tumor suppressor genes and methylation genes, just opposite. Okay, it's just this level. This means lose the function because they're more inactive loops. So the fact is that tumor suppressors are methylated in cancer stem cell. Okay, cancer stem cell is very early stage of cancer cells. Another one is the functional mutation for tumor suppressor is much easier. The reason is that for tumor suppressor mutation, you only need loose function. So if you lose function, there are in the protein, there are many places can be loose function if get mutated. But all con genes, based on the RNSS, they need increased activity, the mutation. There are only a few places if you mutated, and then you get increased. So for example, RAS, if I remember, only three places. In whole protein, only three places you can get mutated. But p53 is tumor suppressor. Is you have a couple of places you get a mutation. So by random, those can be mutated. However, tumor suppressor can be easily functional mutated. Okay, so that's why it gave us a hypothesis that tumor suppressor normally could be at the very early events in the cancer development, and after that, they will have a lot of instability of the genomes. So instability of genomes is because the tumor suppressor often is called gator. Gator means that they keep like a door and protect the genome, not get highly mutated. So, but if they lose function and they're no gator at all, so the tumor genome get lots crazy. So that's crazy. So lots of chromosome amplification, a lot of things you can find. This is known, a lot of that. Okay, so another concept is network community. Actually, this algorithm developed by Newman from University of Michigan. He is a pure mathematician. And then the algorithm is that they don't take care of what's the name of that. They just based on the links of that, and then they get a different communities. Okay. So we apply this algorithm to the cancer signaling network. So basically you get 12 such communities. So very surprisingly is that one, so here is for mathematicians that's easy to explain. So this is a matrix. You can see this is a matrix. Okay, this is 12 community. And then each community contain maybe 20 genes or 30 genes. And then here is the tumor samples. Okay. So then if you have a tumor sample in this module, in this community, you get a gene get mutated. You give to one. Otherwise you give to zero. So the one is red, zero is green. And then surprising results that you find one of the community there dominantly get mutated. It's dominantly get mutated. But others, this one get more mutation, another get mutation. So you suggest that you have sort of combination relationship or collaboration between them. Okay? So then if you really take the science paper they published in the sequencing and you find these patterns. So this pattern is coming out. It means they have some meaningful. Okay? So that's sort of helping me to in one of the NIH panel I defined for grants. I don't want to tell which grants, but I defined for them for sequencing is meaningful. Okay. But when you go to the different type of cancer, you'll find the patterns are some really complicated, like this and this. And this pattern is quite simple. And that actually this answers yesterday's final question. So why some of them have more heterogeneity and some are not? So basically here is that based on this pattern, we predict that this breast cancer and lung cancer could have more subtypes. Because one of the combination of this, one of the combinations can produce one of the tumor. So in reality, if you really correlate the clinical data, and it shows that breast cancer and lung cancer is the top one or two cured cancer compared to others. Because why? It's easy to be cured. There are a lot of combinations. And then, rewiring. So what's this thing talk about here? So if you go to this kind of each of these modules, and they have a set of genes that belong to the same module. And then if you check, okay, ask one question. So in one sample, if a gene gets mutated in this module, whether another gene in the same module gets mutated, the answer is no. Okay? So they have, because those modules, the genes work in the similar function, so one is enough. So the answer is no. However, if one gene in the same module get interfered, probably another one can back them up. It's called rewiring. Here is two examples, exactly like it was predicted. So, for example, here is so one of the genes get mutated or amplified, and then you have a drug really treat that. But a fraction of patients get resistant later on. And then you find out, is this gene get mutated again or amplified again? Similarly, another cancer is same story. So this, like yesterday talking about, this is one of the mechanisms for cheaters. So it's backup, we call it rewiring. In system biology, we like call them system backup and rewiring. So predictive models. So because we're talking about system background, get predictive models. So when a predictive model, we use this concept to develop algorithm. So before that, I give background is that one is called the high throughput gene expression analysis, is called macro-array. So it means that the technology can measure the whole gene's expression levels in tumor, in sample, it doesn't matter. So one is prognostic marker is that we want, or the committee wants, that if you have a gene signature, you can predict this patient can live how long, how long it can live. So the data anomaly is the gene expression data, and also you have follow-ups, means that these patients will come each year until 10 years, but some is die, and 10 years, and even more than 10 years, the follow-up. And then you have what they call survival data. So this thing is, you think about mathematics, and really a simple problem, is that you just correlate with gene expression and survival data. That's it. But when we really into the field, it's not the field. I just tell you that some science here and maybe some story and make not boring for that. Okay, see, here's my example. Breast cancer. Breast cancer gene signatures is invest a lot of money for breast cancer and lots of studies. So this is more study situation compared to other cancer types. And then this is different cohort, and you have gene expression data, you have, like I said, survival data, and then you get different gene signatures, whatever. But the question coming, when I read, I have those things in mind a few years ago, but when I read a few reference paper, I felt I cannot do anything about it. The reason is that, so you see, this gene, so this so-called 70 gene signature, they can predict this one very well. But if you apply this one to those, it doesn't work. Similar to others. And also the accuracy is this level, is clinically useless. Okay. Then people argue maybe hopeless. So then a group, and this, they are statisticians and mathematicians, they really simulation the study and in showing that you need thousand samples to get gene signature. And at that time, thousand is hard to get in the real world. It's really hard because, like I said, the patient needs to follow up. Is that not many patients want to follow up, and not many clinicians want to do this. So to collecting that kind of data, it's totally hard. It means hopeless. And another paper I cannot remember, this is 2008, whatever, I cannot remember when it's published. It's totally clear to say, it's impossible to get gene signature. So that's in the field, you can see a really lot of sort of different thoughts. Until we have this work, I get some idea how we can do it. So like I said, we find that this group is really essential. It seems really essential because any sample this group gets mutated. And they are more tumor suppressor signaling, tumor suppressor related signaling. So that gave me some context. So if before we think the tumor suppressor is important, but here we argue or we show that tumor suppressor mutation is essential. Okay, if it is essential, it's totally different with importance. So if this one gets mutated, must get mutated, and then the genome stability must be really high, and you have a lot of random gene expression signal. The lot of gene expression signal, when you do the correlation, those many of them are not true. They're just by random. So you catch lots of random signals. And then you cannot get the good marker. So that's our hypothesis. Then we design a very simple simulation. So let's say you have, but here is another thing I don't want to go to too detail, but give a more concept, it's more high-level concept level. So let's say you have 200 sample, and then you develop a gene marker, let's say 20 genes, 30 genes, doesn't matter. What do you do with that? I don't want to use this marker to predict another one, okay, another cohort, another patient cohort. It doesn't work already. But I want to see, I just randomly pick up 100 samples from the same pool, and the gene signature developed from this pool, whether it works. 99% of the time, it doesn't work. So that's prove our hypothesis is correct. Then, another group recently from Europe, they confirmed our study, but they stopped there. And then they even, you know, I think this is December published, and then this is January this year in the Scientist. The complaints that, you know, we find a big thing that the top tier journal don't want to accept. They submit to Nature Science, whatever, it doesn't work for them. And finally, they publish here. I mean, my argument is that you point out the problem, it's not enough. You need to give solution, right? So we propose a cancer hallmark-based model. So what's cancer hallmark? Like yesterday we discussed, the cancer phenotype is limited. Why is it limited? Because to be a cancer, you must have some characters. You must have that. So that's called cancer hallmark. For example, the cell must be growing uncontrolled. The cell normally is not go to apoptosis and it cannot die, and all other things. So if you focus on those modeling, you most likely pick up the most relevant signals. You avoid a lot of random signals. So that's the idea. And it works. And then we really focus on these so-called low-risk patients, means that 10 years, those people are still alive. So 10 years still alive, a patient means that in his or her life, only 2% of chance this person die from this tumor. So 10 years is basically enough. So from that, we get a really high accuracy. And then not only in the same cohort, we can cross many cohorts. We show that works. Most interestingly, when we map these so-called gene signatures to the network with the breast cancer mutation genes, they only located around 30 mutation genes. So these 30 mutation genes, you put any data set, you get the surrounding genes, all predictive. They suggest something. So this really gave us to develop a method. I won't talk today because I plan to talk today is that we really develop algorithm to predict the target. You knock down gene, cell die. So that's something. And another question is that whether this marker can get your treatment. Okay? So you have sort of, this is one of ER positive breast cancer patients, around 1,000. And then you have half of them without the drug treatment, half with treatment. And then all we have macro data. And then use our marker, you can separate those patients with three groups. So one group is really low risk, means these patients normally live very long, and some intermediate is high risk. Once you compare the treated, the untreated one for low risk group, you have no benefit. So low risk group patient, you treat this drug or not, it doesn't matter. It's okay. On the other hand, if you go to high risk group, they do find differences for survival. So it means that you can use this signature to tell, look, you're in low risk group. The treated with this drug, useless. You're in high risk group, I suggest you need to treat. Okay? So that's sort of and then this, I cannot remember if from Oxford or Cambridge. So they basically comments the paper we just published. We published the paper, the algorithm. They say, look, seems we get helpful now. So for clinical. And then, like I said, another thing is insights. Okay. So from the signaling network, we find a loss of tyrosine kinase. So tyrosine kinase is something. For mathematics, they don't know, the tyrosine kinase is very special. Why it's special is that in single cell, you don't have tyrosine kinase. But in human or other multicellular cells, they have tyrosine kinase. That means it's really late stage developed, evolved proteins. And tyrosine kinase is 100% of all of them get mutated in cancer. So that gave us idea, say, look, we want maybe study some tennis and tennis stuff. So here is tennis and tennis. Here is called another protein is substrate. Basically, tennis and tennis is first version to there, and they have SR2 bind to this, and then we call them a writer and a reader. So basically, you write this. If no reader, the signal cannot get out. So you must have a writer and a reader, and this relationship is very specific. You cannot get one SR2 and two there and it works. Doesn't work. You must write and reader. They have a channel to not recognize each other. So by the way, the SR2 actually is found by Toronto people. He discovered the Tony Paulson, right? If you know, Tony Paulson is very famous in the field of signaling, and he is the one to discover SR2 in the past maybe 30 years ago. So I collaborated with his former student. So his former student now is a professor in West Ontario, because they did lots of this SR2 interactions. So we have collaboration together and try to understand how this unit get involved. Before that, nobody asked how this unit get involved, right? So because evolution biologists often is checked a single protein level. They never want to say a circuit, how they get evolved. I don't want to go to detail of those because really too much biology is said. So just gave you high level. So we list all those potential combinations, and this is P whatever is different stages of evolution, and you have different functions. The function is this circuit can be have signal inside cell. It can be signal communication between cells, cell and cell, and it can be a really specific signaling combination for specific cells, so like say neuron cells. Okay, so we find out they have really different ways to wiring this together and to respond to different functions. But one question in mind is whether this first reaction linked to cancer. The answer is no. Surprise. So cancer evolution is really is well recognized. However, in terms of first reaction of tyrosine kinase, they're not. The reason that we have, so we can detect the first reaction from tumor samples and the different groups, and then we found there are no difference of that for different stages. I gave a little bit of flavor of modeling. It's more math. Here's what I'm talking before is more statistical modeling. Here is really mathematical modeling. I did just a little bit of flavor, but here is not cancer. It's done by my lab. So we focus on pathways. This is a plant. This is canola. It's in Canada, canola is the oil. It's very important oil in Canada. And then we use the seeds. This is because oil producing seeds, the fatty acids is the oil in the seeds. So remodeling is not whole multiple network. It's impossible. And remodeling basically focus on the fatty acid pathways and the related pathways, because we don't believe the single pathway works. Must be linked to others. And then we dissect that, and we have all gene expression ways to those phase development. And then we develop equations based on those pathways relationship. And then we try to figure out if you change which enzyme, you can increase the oil production or decrease. Okay, so that's the idea. You can examine one by one based on these equations. The good thing is that the parameters for enzymes already determined in the past 50 years. So that's good thing for metabolic modeling. But for signaling, it's not. We don't have that parameter. The results showing are very interesting. So once we predicted, so have predicted results and then they have experimental results. Once we predict the increase or decrease, and basically roughly get correlated. It's not perfect, but roughly I call it. And then we even validated two of them because this is very dominant change in the lab of that. And now we have, did not publish yet, so we validated those in the experiment. So sort of give flavor of those, I think that the mathematical pathways on networks can be, mathematicians can jump in to go that. So here, yeah, I like this book mentioned. And basically I mentioned this book is for telling the chapter 10 is modeling the tensor hypothesis. This is by my postdoc. And then another reference is this is an invited review, however we not only review, but we have implemented the modeling for cancer stuff also here. So that's good clear. Actually, this is current work. This is what I plan to talk, actually. But after yesterday's I listened to the talk and said, look, I maybe change the topic and then to more in the context of other talks together. So basically, briefly, we have can predict drug response. So we can tell this drug to this patient whether 90% accuracy to see whether it's response or not response. You can use it in clinical. And most exciting work actually for me is this, is we can have 90% accuracy to predict whether this cancer cell, modeling of this cancer cell, if you target the gene, the cancer cell will be die or very slow growing. So that's, I'm so excited. And otherwise, we really go to the so-called cancer signaling superheavies. I mean, it's a lot of mutations associated that. But this is lots of large-scale cancer genome sequencing results and with the networks. So, so finally, and thank you those people working with me in the past few years. And then I'd like to answer questions.
The new